Hello, beautiful people. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I am your guest host, Sansara Taylor. On today's show, we'll be sharing segments from the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, which airs on YouTube. Let's begin.
Welcome to the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show. My name is Sansara Taylor, and I'm here today with Annie Day. Annie, welcome.
Very good to be with you, Sansara, and welcome to everyone tuning in. This show is about a real revolution to overthrow this whole system of capitalism, imperialism, the system that has given rise to the Trump fascist regime and so many other atrocities. This show is about a revolution to bring a whole different way the world could be into being, a society based on the Constitution for the new socialist republic in North America that's been authored by the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian.
We are broadcasting at a time when the Trump MAGA regime is accelerating their juggernaut towards all-out fascist consolidation in this country. And it is more urgent than ever that people in their millions be mobilized to stand up in mass resistance and protest, as is being called for by RefuseFascism.org. Resistance on such a profound level that a political crisis is created where Trump cannot govern, where he cannot impose his fascist program, and where he and his regime can't even hold on to the reins of power. This is urgent, and we're going to talk about it today. We can't even begin to cover the whole scope of the fascist acceleration just in the last week, but we're going to touch on a few major leaps in this regard before going into very powerful excerpts from a recent interview that I did with Bob Avakian, speaking about what it's going to take and how it could be possible to dislodge this fascism and the revolution that we need and what that could open up. We're going to talk about the campaign to get Bob Avakian's leadership and his work known throughout society, and we'll bring you a few other things along the way. But let's start with this.
Yesterday, Donald Trump invoked the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 to authorize the immediate deportation of any Venezuelan 14 years old or up, even accused of being a member of the Tren de Aragua gang. No due process, no need for a crime to be committed, just immediate deportation. In other words, any Venezuelan living in the U.S. legally, including children, can be kidnapped at any moment and deported. This law is supposed to only apply to countries the U.S. is at war with, which Venezuela definitely is not. And since Trump has repeatedly called immigrants invaders, this opens the door to doing the same thing to immigrants from many other countries. But that isn't even the half of it. These immigrants are not being sent back to Venezuela where they can go on about living their lives. They're being sent to El Salvador where they're going to be locked up in torturous hellhole prisons under a deal with fascist Salvadoran President Nayib Bukele. And that's still not the half of it. Last night, a federal judge blocked Trump's order and demanded the planes full of Venezuelan deportees, which apparently were mid-air en route to El Salvador, to immediately turn around and come back to the U.S. And it seems this order was ignored in flagrant violation of the separation of powers and the rule of law. Now just think about this. The last time the Alien Enemies Act was invoked was in World War II, and it was used to throw 120,000 Japanese Americans, men, women, children, citizens and non-citizens in concentration camps for almost 4 years. One of the most racist and horrific crimes against humanity that this country's perpetrated. And the fact that this was done legally should tell you something very profound about how rotten and illegitimate this whole system and its great democracy actually are. But what Trump is doing now is in many ways even more dangerous because of how blatantly illegal it is, and how Trump and Rubio and the rest are declaring themselves above the law. What we're facing now is fascism, nothing less. And as the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian pointed out in a very important recent article, while Hitler came to power through the normal processes in Germany, he quickly set about destroying those norms and replacing them with open fascist dictatorship. And that laid the basis for the horrific atrocities to come. What we're seeing right now with the kidnapping of pro-Palestinian protesters and the kidnapping of Venezuelans just for being Venezuelan is just the beginning if we don't act bravely and in massive numbers to stop it. This is a test of whether Americans are going to repeat Pastor Niemöller's famous poem or write a different poem of courageous resistance. Now is the time to draw the line before it is too late. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. The fascist Trump regime must go.
Since that was filmed, A judge dragged Trump's people into court and they stonewalled. And then Trump's so-called border czar said this.
We're not stopping. I don't care what the judges think. I don't care what the left thinks. We're coming.
And then Trump followed this up saying that the judge in the case should be impeached. This is unprecedented. The executive branch with the president and all that is supposed to be beholden to the courts, to the judiciary. That's how the balance of powers, the checks and balances of the so-called great democracy are supposed to work. But Trump is openly violating and shredding this. And this went so far as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court made a public statement that judges should not be impeached, that is not how that works. If you have a difference with a judge's ruling, you're supposed to go along with the court process. This right here is a major rift in society.
Yeah, and Trump's assault on the rule of law, it's a full court press. It's taking place in many different dimensions, and we cover it in depth at revcom.us. I encourage you to go there and read about it. I want to talk about one of the things we cover that's a little complex, but it's really important. It's Trump's vendetta against, his retribution against the major DC law firm called Perkins Coie. And this is a law firm that took a lot of cases for the Democrats, for Hillary Clinton, really kicked Trump's ass in court again and again in their election accusations of theft. And Trump tried to sue them in the past, and his suit against them was shot down because they were in the right. His suit had no merit. But now Trump sits in the president's office, and he has the power of the executive authority, and he's issued an executive order specifically targeting this law firm, Perkins Coie, and among other things, banning them from even entering federal buildings, including courtrooms. So they started losing clients immediately because they can't even walk into the courtroom to defend their clients. Now, Perkins Coie sued Trump over this action. First of all, had a very hard time getting a lawyer because all the lawyers were afraid to defend them because they might be targeted. Think about that. Finally, they get into court, they sue Trump, and they prevail. The judge literally said that what Trump did sent a chill down his spine. But the damage has already been done. Even though the judge blocked some of this executive order, said it's unconstitutional, can't go forward, Perkins Coie already lost clients. They're not going to have an almost impossible time getting new clients because they have a bullseye on them. And a chill has been put over every lawyer and every legal firm in this country. If you think about all the people under attack by Trump, people fired by DOGE, scientists who could lose funding, people who are academics, other people who are being attacked by Trump MAGA fascism, all of them need lawyers. And now every lawyer, every law firm has to think about what was done to Perkins Coie before taking such a case and perhaps provoking Trump's ire.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you have to ask, what does the rule of law mean if you can't have lawyers representing people under attack, under assault? This is incredibly dangerous. It is fascism accelerating. And then there's the case of Mahmoud Khalil. Mahmoud is a recent graduate from Columbia University. He was an activist in the pro-Palestinian struggle and of Palestinian descent himself, and a green card holder. And he was abducted in the night a week and a half ago, Saturday, March 8th, and taken to an immigration prison and threatening to have his green card revoked. Now, there's a big trial, a big hearing coming up on March 27th. RefuseFascism.org has called for mass protests to take place across the country. If you want to read more about the case, go to revcom.us. And we talked more about it last week and the extreme stakes of this. We want to share a letter that he sent from inside the Louisiana prison where he's being held. He said this. He said, "My name is Mahmoud Khalil, and I'm a political prisoner. I'm writing to you from a detention facility in Louisiana, where I wake to cold mornings and spend long days bearing witness to the quiet injustices underway against a great many people precluded from the protections of the law. Who has the right to have rights? It is certainly not the humans crowded into the cells here. Justice escapes the contours of this nation's immigration facilities. My arrest was a direct consequence of exercising my right to free speech as I advocated for a free Palestine and an end to the genocide in Gaza, which resumed in full force Monday night. With January's ceasefire now broken, parents in Gaza are once again cradling two small shrouds, and families are forced to weigh starvation and displacement against bombs. It is our moral imperative to persist in the struggle for their complete freedom. And then he ended his letter, knowing fully that this moment transcends my individual circumstances, I hope nonetheless to be free to witness the birth of my firstborn child. His wife is 8 months pregnant, and he's being held, abducted, put into a detention prison because of his basic speech and protest.
So in terms of this assault on the rule of law, this quote really stood out to both of us from a professor at the University of Chicago, Professor Azeek Huck, who says, "I think it's more useful to say that this is moving us into a completely different kind of constitutional order, one that's no longer characterized by laws that bind officials and can be enforced. The law, in other words, becomes a tool to harm enemies, but not to bind those who govern. That is quite different. That is a quite different constitutional order from the one that we've had for so long."
And, you know, and yet what is not said in the pages of the New York Times is this is fascism. That's the different kind of constitutional order. It's one where there is no constitutional order except as interpreted by Trump, MAGA, the whole fascist regime.
And then there's Gaza.
In the middle of the night, in the dark of the night on Monday night, the neo-Nazi regime of Israel, with the full backing of the Trump MAGA fascist regime, just unloosed hell on the people of Gaza. You know, it is and has been an open air prison. People are trapped. Over 2 million people are trapped in rubble and death. And Israel just unleashed a barrage of bombs falling from the sky, and the killing has not stopped. They broke the ceasefire, and this is coming amidst a situation where after 2 weeks, there's been no aid coming in. People are already starving. They murdered over 400 people in a single night. And as I said, the killing has not stopped since then. And we're going to show a video from a doctor that's from Australia who's in Gaza right now, in the north of Gaza, now trapped actually in the north of Gaza because Israel opened that Netzarim corridor and is basically shooting anyone in sight. So you can't even travel from north to south. So this is a doctor now trapped in the north of Gaza.
We've worked throughout the entire night. We haven't stopped. The bombing has been nonstop. We've run out of ketamine. We've run out of propofol. We've run out of all painkillers. We can't sedate anyone. We can't give them any analgesia. When we intubate people, they wake up and they're choking because we have no sedation. There are 7 girls getting their legs amputated, no anesthesia. The bombing is still going on. The room is still shaking. I haven't slept. We went to bed at about 1 o'clock, and at 1:30 the bombing started. It's about 10 a.m. now. I've just gone back to my room. I'm lightheaded. I'm dizzy. And I mean, it was just mostly women and children, burnt head to toe, limbs missing, heads missing. You know, there's a video I put up on my story of me doing a chest drain. The gentleman that did the chest drain, and he died on the way to the CT scan. There's another video of 3 girls laying on a bed. That's his 3 girls, who are now orphaned. Their mother didn't even make it into the hospital. She was killed along with their other sister. I don't know what to tell you. I was here in June, nothing to this intensity. This is unbelievable. And the bombing is still going on. The rooms are still shaking. The screams are everywhere. It's insane. I feel dizzy and lightheaded. The smell of burnt flesh is still in my nose.
Let yourself really feel deeply what that doctor was just giving life to. The situation in Gaza, everything we've been talking about, underscores the urgency for people to act now.
Yeah, people in their millions. We need to go out and wake people up and mobilize them to stand up to this and say, no, in the name of humanity, We refuse to accept a fascist America. The Trump fascist regime must go. And there's a basis for this. There's an urgency, and time is running out for people to stand up. I mean, we're talking about the ice sheet of repression and chill and fascist consolidation moving. But it's both urgent that people stand up, but it's also possible. It is still possible to defeat this fascism and to mobilize in the broad numbers. I want to play something that I found both extremely chilling, but also shows some of the potential. So let's listen to this clip.
The leaders of these law firms have gone back and forth with each other about what to do. Should they file a friend of the court brief? Should they put out a joint statement? And despite all of those discussions, they are yet to take any collective action.
Suggesting to some real degree that they are intimidated, that they are scared that what he's doing is working.
Privately, they will all tell me how horrific they think this is. But publicly, they're saying very little.
Now, look, I find that both extremely chilling. Everybody knows this is outrageous. Everybody knows this is horrific, and yet they're saying nothing. They're going along. But it also shows what's just beneath the surface, including in places where from the outside you'd think nobody was paying any attention. And you have to understand how this could start to change, not just among law firms, but among major institutions under assault, among all sectors of society, if there were growing numbers of people standing up in the streets saying no and changing the whole political atmosphere and moving to drive this fascist regime out, including on March 27th, on the day of Mahmoud Khalil's hearing. This has to take a leap, and we have to go forward from there.
I mean, these institutions are capitulating one after the other, right? That's what you just heard. But if there were the force of millions of people in the streets, that dynamic can be changed. They're only calculating right now the safety and the security of their own ass. They have to also calculate the space provided and the backing provided if and as people are out in mass, determined, sustained protest.
You are listening to The Michael Slate Show. We're going to take a short musical break and be right back.
Ein, zwei, drei, vier.
Strange things are happening, Lord. I don't know what to do. My friends say it's in my head, I say it's deja vu. It's all too familiar, been down this road before. I believe it was in Germany, just before the war. A meanness swept the land, stealing our hearts and the hands of time, taking us back in history to a place on the darker side, where we saluted the flags of fear and the voice of ignorance roared. Taking us back to Germany just before. Balance of power shifted when the people cast their vote.
Our line in a... So we want to go now to the interview that I did with Bob Avakian earlier this year. Bob Avakian has stood out. We've said this before, but it's so important. He stood out for decades in sounding the alarm on the rising fascism in this country, for at least 10 years in sounding the alarm on Trump MAGA fascism. And if more people had listened to him, rather than succumbing to anti-communist prejudice or snark or dismissal without engagement, if more people had listened to Bob Avakian, including on this question alone of the rise of fascism, we would be in a very different place. And the point in saying that now is to seize on and spread his voice now when it matters so much. He's in this clip, I ask him, what would it look like? How is it really possible for people to come forward and defeat this Trump MAGA fascism and bring forward the struggle for an actual revolution? This is towards the end of the second interview that I did with him. Let's watch. am moving closer to a conclusion here. One more time to how could it really be real that tens of millions could come forward to defeat this fascism? And how does that relate to being in a time when revolution is more possible?
That depends, and we talked about this before, that depends on people caring. Well, there are tens of millions of people who do care. There are tens of millions of people who hate the various ways in which people are oppressed and demeaned and degraded, you know, whether it's women or Black people, you know, Latinos, other people of color, whether it's LGBT people, whether, you know, care about the environment, people who, you know, understand, at least on a basic level, that the great majority of immigrants who are driven from their own homelands, you know, across the world and come to this country are doing so because of conditions that have become intolerable for them and in order to try to find some kind of better life for themselves and their families, you know, on that sort of basic level. There are people who really deeply care about all these things, you know, but at the same time, they're locked within the framework of the existing system. And so right now, most of them are paralyzed, paralyzed with fear, paralyzed with demoralization, paralyzed by the notion, well, after all, we talked about this way back at the beginning, you know, that after all, this is a legitimate way the system operates, and this is what the American people chose. This is being drummed into them all the time. So they're being paralyzed by this. And, you know, but that stands in very sharp contradiction that they do care. But they are never going to be led by the Democratic Party and by other mainstream ruling class representatives to rise up against all the things that they do care about and even deeply hate, you know, which I was just speaking to, including the danger of nuclear war as well as environmental destruction. You know, so people have to break out of the idea of going along with this is the way things work under this system. You know, and as we talked about earlier, they have to go beyond the idea, well, we just have to be let it be known that we don't like this stuff or we hate this stuff and we want it to stop. And then if they don't listen to us, well, I guess there's nothing we can do. There is something we can do, and people need to be, you know, one to understand there is something they need to do, but it is going to require putting yourself on the line. You know, it is, but not just by yourself. Together with others, it involves winning others and winning others to win others, to become a mass force, to come onto the political stage and to break out of the stranglehold being exerted by the Democratic Party officials, you know, and the Democratic Party as a whole and by the dominant media and all the other people who are, you know, cravenly capitulating to this fascism in order to preserve the stability of this monstrous system. So the potential is there in the caring, but people have to understand where this fascism came from, why these other forces in the ruling structures of society are not going to lead them to oppose it and are capitulating to it, you know, and what you know, they are called on to do and what they can accomplish by actually joining together in growing numbers and waves. In, you know, in rapidly growing waves of masses of people who make clear their determination that no, we don't, you know, this fascism is not legitimate. The fact that it is coming to power through the normal processes of this system does not mean that this fascism is legitimate. What it does raise is that the whole system is illegitimate if this kind of fascism can arise out of the soil of this system and come to power through the regular processes of this system. So that takes you to the verge of the next point. And these things are different. It is necessary to unite millions and millions of people in a massive determined movement to, you know, to prevent this fascism from being consolidated and carrying out its horrific program. That unity has to be as broad as it can possibly be, including people who aren't convinced that this is somehow related to the fundamental nature of the whole system and the whole system has to go. But at the same time, those of us, RevComs and growing numbers of people who do understand that this is rooted in you know, this system, and it's not the only horror of this system, but it's just one, you know, concentrated horror of much greater atrocity and, you know, and outrage of this whole system. Those of us who do understand that at any given time, while uniting as broadly as possible with others who aren't yet one to that, need to be, you know, bringing forward and struggling sharply to bring that understanding to growing numbers of people and handling correctly and well the relationship between the broad unity, uniting all who can be united, to really prevent this fascism from carrying out its horrific program, while we're working to win growing numbers of people to see that it's the whole system that's a horror, that this fascism is one concentrated expression of the horror of this system, but it's fundamentally, you know, as I've said, both a horrific and a completely outmoded system that humanity needs to and can move beyond, and we have to rise up in revolutionary struggle to bring about a whole different system, you know, sweeping this one completely off the stage of history and getting into all the things we talked about earlier in terms of transforming society and ultimately the whole world in a really emancipating way.
That was Bob Avakian in a recent series of interviews that Sansara did with him recently. Humanity does not have to live this way. And you can watch these in full on our channel, youtube.com/therevcoms, and on Bob Avakian's social media platform. These interviews are such a resource for people to really understand, you know, both of what he just broke down, what we're facing, what we need to do right now, which people are really reeling and asking, but also to open up the bigger debate that we have to be having about where this fascism has come from and what kind of better world is possible.
I think as urgent as it is, and it very much is, that we are mobilizing people to stand up, to be in the streets, to resist, to say the Trump fascist regime must go, it is just as urgent that we're sitting down with people, watching these interviews, talking with them, bringing new people into viewing this. It changes your understanding of what we're facing, of where it came from, of what's possible. It changes the rigor with which you think and probe things. And it's ideologically, you get the anchoring of why it is important and why it is possible to stand up and make an impact in this world we're living in with our one chance here on Earth to do something at this time when literally the future of humanity is being determined. And Bob Avakian has clarity. He has the integrity to stand and tell the truth, even when it's difficult. And he has a vision of where we could go with this and why it's worth it and can make all the difference to stand up to this horror.
Yeah. And the more people are hearing that vision, the more people, the more you see something else is possible and actually feel that vision of a whole different way the world could be, the more the nightmare that we're living in is completely intolerable. Mm-hmm. People are way too inured and used to a horror. But the more you see something else is possible, the more that can change. So actually, now we want to go into a second clip from these interviews. This is from a little bit earlier in part two, where Sansara asked Bob Avakian about the constitution for the new socialist republic in North America and some of what's different in his understanding of the new communism and what kind of world we need to be fighting for.
You've made the point that, and it's true, never before in any proposed or actually existing founding document of a government has there been anything close to the level of not only provision for dissent, protest, disagreement, ferment, striking out in many different directions artistically, culturally, and politically, as is written into the Constitution you authored, but also the encouragement for this and the fostering of it, while at the same time the whole of society, the economy, everything will be oriented in a different way to meeting people's needs and overcoming oppression. Can you give an example of how that's built into the Constitution you wrote and a little bit more on why that matters so much?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of examples, a lot of different dimensions. I mean, I could take one, for example, in the legal system and the rights of the people. Not only is the right of dissent upheld, including the right to advocate getting rid of the new socialist system and going back to capitalism. You know, if people attempt to violently overthrow the new socialist system, then they'll be defeated in that. But advocating for doing that is protected under this Constitution. But, you know, but beyond that, you know, in, for example, let me give you, I started to talk about the legal system. In the legal system, it establishes in the Constitution not only that there'll be institutions in the government for prosecuting crimes and, you know, criminal activity that people are accused of, but also there'll be provision for defense provided for people who are being so prosecuted, who are in an adversarial position with the government. Because it's recognized that there can be contradictions, even in a socialist society, between the government and the people where the government is wrong. You know, so that's a very important thing to be stated, you know, directly right in the Constitution, which it is. And then it said that the institutions that provide for defense for people who are in, you know, an adversarial position, being prosecuted or whatever by the government, that the funds for that have to be at least equal to what's provided for the prosecution, institutions that prosecute people in this situation. Now think about, you know, think about the people who are working as public defenders, you know, under this system. And the idea that they would have the funds at least equal to what the resources the prosecutor have is completely unthinkable under this system. So that's just one thing, one aspect of it. There, you know, you go through the and even in the prisons, which yes, there will be a need for prisons. There will be still people who commit common crimes, quote unquote, including serious ones. And there will be people who attempt to violently attack people who are attempting, you know, who are working to carry forward the revolution, which will be criminalized, you know, if you're violently attacking people. If people are tried through the due process, and due process is provided for extensively in this Constitution, including real emphasis on the presumption of innocence, which is a joke in this society, but real emphasis on the presumption of innocence of people accused of crimes. But if they are tried through due process and convicted and sentenced and imprisoned, it's said not only that the conditions there have to be humane and the standards have to be those of society in general, rather than the terrible conditions in which people are held imprisoned under this system, but also in terms of the people's education. Not only is education provided for, but it said specifically that they have to be, there have to be available to them all kinds of, you know, materials that put forward a broad array of viewpoints, not just the viewpoint of the socialism and of the socialist government. Even things which, you know, historical works and other works that are, you know, in opposition to what the socialist government stands for and is working to bring about. That's also, you know, an application of what I'm talking about with the new communism. Or in the educational system, the same thing. The purpose of the educational system is not as it is under this system, so that we can get a bunch of technocrats so we can outcompete and, you know, and win conflicts with other capitalist imperialist countries. It's, as the Constitution says, to enable people to pursue the truth wherever the truth leads, on the basis of scientific curiosity and intellectual ferment. Now, I'm paraphrasing, but you go to the Constitution, you can see that basic point is right in there. Or you can go into the media and culture. In the media, it said, you know, that even in the government-run media, there has to be provision for people to articulate opposing views right in the government media. But beyond that, there has to be extensive funding for independent media, which are not, you know, just tied to the line and the position of the government and may be critical of the government, even may be critical of the whole socialist system, that there has to actually be public funding to enable those people to give voice to that. And the same in the realm of culture. Not only a fostering of culture on a broad scale, but also even cultural works which do the same, which call into question, you know, not only policies at a particular time of the government, but even the whole system, that the whole new system that's been brought into being and where it's attempting to go. Why? Not because ultimately I'm, after all, a nice liberal and want to, you know, pander to all these liberals out there who complain about communism being repressive. That's their problem. What the reason for this is, it goes back to everything that's actually true is good for what we're setting out to do, and you need a lot of intellectual and cultural ferment First of all, so that people can, you know, give expression to that and can breathe and feel at ease in society and can be enriched by a lot of that. And so that you can sort through and learn more deeply what the reality actually is through this very complex and at times even intense process. And I've said that, you know, for the people leading this, who do recognize the need to take it to communism and to work through all the contradictions and conflicts to overcome all the oppressive and exploitative relations, for those people to implement what's called for in this constitution really will require them at times to go to the brink of being drawn and quartered, pulled apart by the, you know, by the contradictory trends and struggles in society. But you have to be willing to do that in order to more deeply carry out the process of advancing toward, you know, beyond all these four alls that Marx talked about, all the exploitation, oppression, the you know, repressive institutions, the stultifying and degrading culture, and get to a whole different world where all those things finally are left behind and human beings really can relate to each other as fully human beings.
Just think about what BA just said, what we just heard from him, and how radically different this robust defense of people's rights, of the rule of law, of protections for dissent, for people to strike out in different directions, how radically different that is from everything we began the show with in terms of Trump's all-out assault on the rule of law today. And compare it as well to even the best of the history of the communist revolutions that have existed before Bob Avakian. This is a radically different vision of human emancipation and the road to get there. And it is, you know, we've put it on the pages of RevCom.us, and it is so profoundly true that there you can mark the world and human history from before BA and after BA in terms of really having the scientific understanding, the emancipatory framework, the vision, and the strategy and approach to getting to an actual revolution and one that can lead to all the way emancipation. He has remade the project of human emancipation, and you got a sense of it in that answer. And this is something that really this second interview in particular, which we just drew from, I took the opportunity to ask repeatedly and in different ways for Bob Avakian to bring alive the different dimensions of this new communism. And people really have no idea. They have no idea. They've been lied to about communism. It's been slandered. It's been distorted. But it's also been remade. So half of what they know is untrue. But even what the best of communism was before Bob Avakian has been radically remade in a way that really is emancipating. And people need to know about this.
I was in a discussion with some people yesterday of a different section from part two of this interview. And off of the discussion, this one woman said, "Man, listening to this makes me feel like I just want to run outside with a big bullhorn and say, hey, people, there is a new communism. There is a new communism." And just, you know, because what it can open up for people to have a sense that the world really does not have to be this way. And it's what the system doesn't want you to think. It's what the media mouthpieces don't want you to think. Like the actual, you know, human society could live on a whole different foundation, and it will be a struggle. And it will be a fight, and it will not be easy. And Bob Avakian makes that very clear all through these interviews, putting the problems of the revolution to all of those within earshot. But there really is a different way to live, to relate to each other, as you know, as he ends the clip that we just watched with. Look exactly at the time when the pace with which the Trump fascist regime is moving is so staggering and so rapid is when people need to have their sights raised. And actually, it's because the norms are being broken. All the ways in which people have been trained to be adhered to this horrific system, that's being cracked. It's being ripped up. And it's exactly at that time that people need to and are more open to hearing the kind of profound and radical revision that Bob Avakian just laid out about human society could be totally remade on an actually liberating foundation that, frankly, people would want to live in, that they could actually contribute to the future of society. And then through the process right now of people coming together to engage the interviews from Bob Avakian, to engage the really moving and packed in New Year's message that gives a lot of leadership and direction to the historic juncture that we're at, as well as the social media overall, coming together to engage all this can forge the kind of community and backbone that people need for the fight that's in front of us, that we are going to have to wage and put ourselves on the line for and do so together, and do so as we raise our sights and keep our eyes lifted to the kind of world that we can bring into being.
And it's why it's so important that we have this campaign to get Bob Avakian's leadership, to get his social media, to get these interviews out before all of society. And we've accomplished a lot with this campaign so far. You're going to talk about that in a second, but there's so much more to get Bob Avakian's voice out.
There's, you know, millions of people who've encountered Bob Avakian online, on social media, and some on the ground because of the funds that have been raised and the work that's been done so far. I mean, it just, you know, I have just in happenstance encountered people. I was at a gallery opening a couple weeks ago and someone runs by and goes, Bob Avakian, I love Bob Avakian. It turns out she's a YouTube subscriber. She's never encountered the RevComs or anything, but she listens to you know, the leadership that Bob Avakian's providing online. Yesterday on a college campus, someone encountered someone who said, oh, I listen to him all the time on the internet. And talked actually about how his thinking has been changed and challenged and is pretty hungry for joining in to wage the fight for the revolution that Avakian is talking about. So it's already had, you know, significant impact. You know, many, many thousands have watched some of these messages from BA in full or in part. I mean, many millions in part, thousands in full. It is the attraction of the kind of community and the force we're talking about that can add up to being a pole planted in society with people knowing, oh, this is somebody who's got some serious answers and who I'm being challenged to look into. And it's through the struggle and the debate, because it also is going up against the snark and the people who want to maintain, you know, the status quo, that want to attack Bob Avakian. And it's through all of that, taking on that bullshit and the lies and the slander and raising people's sights to what BA is really talking about, that this can become, like I said, a pole planted. So with that, we want to go to one of the voices of conscience. This is a professor from Columbia University, Joseph Howley, who spoke out at a press conference at a court hearing that took place for Mahmoud Khalil. If you want to hear more voices of resistance, go to revcom.us. It is an inspiring section of our website on the ways that people are fighting back and speaking out. So let's go to this video.
The last time I spoke at a press conference was April 18th. That day, police officers in crowd control gear entered our campus for the first time in decades and carried off dozens of students who were peacefully and quietly encamped on one of the enclosed lawns in front of our library, threatening no one. As I watched this unfold in horror, I was asked to speak at an emergency press conference alongside Mahmoud, who had just been asked to negotiate on behalf of the encampment. It is always dangerous to speak in public for Palestinian rights, safety, and freedom with your face uncovered and your name declared. You can be sure you will be harassed, doxxed, terrorized. People will try to get you fired from your job for speaking here. I will receive a new round of death threats, slander, complaints to my employer. When I step down from here, I will publish these remarks to protect me from the inevitable attempts to misrepresent my words. And Mahmoud, as a student negotiator, took these same risks and many more. Mahmoud is a man of decency, honor, and kindness. He has distinguished himself in his work as an advocate and negotiator, as someone committed to peaceful resolution of difficult situations. He is a consummate diplomat in his disposition and his character. What the Trump government is doing to Mahmoud is obscene. It is unreasonable, intolerable, unconstitutional. So why do they think they can get away with it? The Trump administration is betting that Americans will happily look the other way as one more Palestinian is victimized here on American soil. They are betting that when you hear Mahmoud's name or the word Palestinian, the parts of you that make you a thinking and rational and caring person will switch off, and you will believe the worst about him, and you will turn a blind eye to these grave violations of his rights. And after what I've seen over the last year and a half, I'm not sure they're wrong. Anti-Palestinian groups have spent all year casually leveling the most dangerous accusations on the flimsiest grounds, and members of our own community have repeated them. Don't like seeing a keffiyeh? Call them a terrorist and call the cops. Don't like their views? Call them anti-Semitic and get them expelled. don't like that your Jewish colleague has the chutzpah to say free Palestine, report him for Jew hatred to a university task force. Don't like seeing a broad and diverse movement of courageous young people standing together against the ethnic cleansing of Gaza, call your friends in the government and send the feds to their door. As an educator, it disgusts me that anyone who wants to be taken seriously in association with a university would deal so ignorantly with language and truth. But more than that, I am ashamed as a Jewish person that this kind of slander has found currency in some parts of my own community in service of the racist and anti-Semitic Trump agenda. Trump's claim that this atrocity combats anti-Semitism is insulting. We will not take lectures on anti-Semitism from segregationists and neo-Nazis. We will not allow a white supremacist president and his party to claim the mantle of Jewish safety as they shred the Constitution and spin outlandish legal theories to justify the suppression of dissent and the brutalization of those who oppose war and apartheid. One of the most insidious forms of prejudice toward Jews is the trope of dual allegiance, which suggests that we Jews, because of our ethnicity or religion, have secret political commitments at odds with the communities we live in, that we are not to be trusted, that you should always believe the worst about us. When Donald Trump sneers at globalists, this is what he means. And when I see people unquestioningly trafficking in the wildest assertions about Mahmoud just because he is Palestinian, I hear the exact same kind of prejudice that drove generations of my own family from their homes in Europe. Anyone who spread the lies about Mahmoud that resulted in his detention should be ashamed. And if you find yourself believing whatever someone tells you about Mahmoud just because he is Palestinian or because he spoke up against a murderous war that you somehow still support, I can only implore you to scrutinize your own soul. Why are we here? Because we want our friend back. But we are also here because what happens to Mahmoud could happen to any of us. If they can strip the green card from a lawful permanent resident, they can do whatever they want to a citizen. If you're waiting for permission to think of this as a crisis, here it is. What has been done to Mahmoud goes far beyond whether or not you agree with the cause of Palestinian liberation. Where exactly are we in the poem that begins, "When they came for the communists, I did not speak out"? Well, they've already come for the asylum seekers. They've come for the migrant families. Now they've come for Mahmoud Khalil. It's not a very long poem. So how far down the list do you think you are? I've been proud to stand as a Jew beside Mahmoud Khalil and call for a free and just and peaceful Israel-Palestine. It is my honor now to stand before you and call on what remains of the United States government to do the right thing and free Mahmoud Khalil. Thank you.
Once again, let me remind you that you are listening to The Michael Slate Show.
Professor Howley there, I think, spoke so well to the stakes of this case of Mahmoud Khalil and the stand and orientation that people have to have. I want to underscore, Refuse Fascism has called for protests across this country on March 27th. That's the next scheduled date of Mahmoud's hearings. Across the country, and especially in New York or maybe in Newark where he's going to be, there needs to be people in the streets raising the slogans, "Free Mahmoud Khalil now. Stop the fascist attacks on the rights to free speech, dissent, and the rule of law. Stop the demonization, abduction, and deportation of all immigrants and refugees. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. The Trump fascist regime must go."
Yeah, and if you're watching this, take this weekend and do two things. Build like hell for these protests. Spread the word of this everywhere. Challenge.
Get the flyer at refusefascism.org. Right. You can take it out, run it off, get some friends together, hook up with Refuse Fascism if it's in your area, or self-organize.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one. And two, watch those interviews from Bob Avakian. Watch his New Year's message. watch any of his social media and be part of spreading these everywhere. Get people together, call your neighbors, call your friends, call your family, get people together, watch them and talk about the difference it would make if these were being spread all throughout society, and do those things together. Go out all day and spread the word, and then come home and debate and discuss, or watch them over breakfast and then go make trouble out in the streets all day. This is a time really for a big fight and a big debate.
All right, so this brings us to the end of our episode today. I want to thank the Revolution Nothing Less crew. I want to thank all of you for tuning in and watching. If you aren't yet, become a subscriber. Subscribe to our channel. Hit the notification button. Leave a comment below. Hit the like button. Help us with the algorithm and let us know what you're thinking, what you learned, what questions you have, ideas you have in the comments below for the struggle ahead.
So we want to go out with kind of a special thing. We're going to play a song from the protest folk singer David Rovix. The song is called St. Patrick's Battalion. The other day I was having dinner with a regular viewer of the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show who told the story about, that's the theme of the song we're about to hear, of the battalion of the San Patricios. This was a group of Irish immigrants who were just newly emigrated to the U.S. and were drafted to fight in the Mexican-American War. And when they got to Mexico to fight on behalf of the U.S. in the late 1840s, they realized they were on the wrong side. And they, you know, basically became traitors to the U.S. for a very good reason, and they fought on the Mexican side. And this person, the viewer of the show, said that learning about this history when he was 14 years old made him decide that for the rest of his life, he was going to fight on the right side of history, and he was going to go against the tide, and he was going to put himself on the line to do that. And I think it's a powerful lesson that everybody needs to hear, take to heart, and act on now. So we want to go to the St. Patrick's Battalion.
My name is John Riley, I'll have your ear only a while. I left my dear home in Ireland, it was death, starvation, or exile. When I got to America, it was my duty to go. Enter the army and slog across Texas to join in the war against Mexico. And it was there in the pueblos and hillsides that I saw the mistake I had made. Part of a conquering army with the morals of a bayonet blade. And there amidst all these poor dying Catholics, screaming children, the burning stench of it all, myself and 200 Irishmen decided to rise to the call. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We marched neath the green flag of St. Patrick, emblazoned with Erin Go Brath, bright with the harp and the shamrock, and Libertad para la República. Just 50 years after Wolfe Tone, 5,000 miles away, the Yanks called us a legion of strangers, and they can talk as they may. But from Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We fought them in Matamoros while their volunteers were reaping the nuns. In Monterrey and Cerro Gordo, we fought on as Ireland's sons. We were the red-headed fighters for freedom amidst these brown-skinned women and men. Side by side we fought against tyranny, and I dare say we'd do it again. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side.
And that brings us to the end of another show here at the Michael Slate Show. I'd like to thank Andy Z and everybody at the Revolution Nothing Less Show, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and all of you for tuning in. And again, check out the RevComs on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRevComs and follow at Bob Avakian Official on all your social media platforms. And remember, the problem is not human nature, it is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. My name is Sansara Taylor. I'll talk to you again next week.
Trouble.